97.1 FM Talk Podcast. This hour of the Mark Reardon Show is sponsored by Gamma Tree Experts. Your trees deserve the best care. Call Gamma Tree Experts. This is the Mark Reardon Show on 97.1 FM Talk.
Welcome back for another hour of the Mark Reardon Show. I'm Ryan Recker filling in at Ryan Recker. If you want to look me up on Twitter, Ryan Recker Radio on Facebook. Again, you guys put together a fantastic lineup of guests. Joining us now is White House correspondent for the Washington Times, Jeff Mordock. Thank you for coming on again today.
For having me, Ryan. Always enjoy it.
So where do we start? We can talk about the news of President Trump's health. And we just talked to a doctor, I would say 10 minutes ago, 15 minutes ago, Dr. Anthony Sohn, and kind of discussed what was going on, what happens when the blood pools down and to the ankle. You wear the compression socks, but things are going to be okay. How do you think this story is being handled so far?
So far, it's being handled about as well as the White House can handle it. I mean, as soon as this came up, they released information from his doctor. They put out a statement. Caroline addressed it off the bat at the press briefing today. She got ahead of it before she started getting questions about it. And if you notice, for the 40 minutes that followed, there was maybe one question about it because she got ahead of it with forthright information. And obviously we can contrast that to the most obvious thing, which is how the previous administration was so sketchy with Joe Biden's health.
Oh, absolutely. They hid him away. In fact, I don't even know if they did much in the way of press conferences that would even give you an opportunity to answer sometimes. But so getting ahead of it, that's always a good thing. And as a person of the media and understand how news can travel quickly, what do you think the sweet spot is? Do you think that once it's found, get the news out there immediately? Or do you think when it comes to the health of the president of the United States, that they should be proactive in some ways, releasing the information before it's caught by a photographer?
I think they should have been proactive. I think being caught by the photographer kind of pushed them into a bit of a panic mode to get things out there and then started to react to it. They probably should. But once it was caught, they certainly moved to be proactive and get that information out there.
Yeah. You know, I wondered, I thought, are they going to pay more attention to Trump's ankles than they did Joe Biden's cognitive decline for all those years? I wondered how much emphasis they were going to put on this when it comes to news coverage and how much importance I thought they would put on this. But it sounds like the coverage is pretty appropriately contained to where you think it should be.
So far, that's what I've seen. But keep in mind, we've only known this for, what, 2 hours, 3 hours now? Give it time to go through the cycle. Give time for people to construct the narrative. Give time for people to raise questions. And then we'll see what the coverage is. But to me, what tells me that the White House did a good job handling it is how Caroline came out. She gave us all the details. They released the letter. And there wasn't much left in that briefing room for people to ask about, which is why my opinion is you can always tell how well the White House is covering any White House, how they're doing with messaging based on the questions that you get in the briefing room. And it didn't seem like this generated a lot of curiosity in the briefing room. And not to go down another rabbit hole, but you could contrast that with today's briefing room was largely about Epstein, which their messaging on that has been terrible.
Yeah, well, let's talk about the Epstein thing. Messaging or not, it's a tough situation for him to be in, but it's actually something that has turned a lot of people against him based on the idea that they're not going to be transparent, or they say they've already been as transparent as they possibly can be, which doesn't satisfy a lot of the different critics, myself included, I guess. So when we talk about the Epstein taking the driver's seat and the narrative of what's happening with the White House right now, certainly not what they would want because they have the rescission and they're looking more economic. But this is the thing that's going to be driving the conversation, I think, moving forward until it's settled. And I don't even know if it'll ever be settled. It sounds like they're just trying to push this back.
Yeah, their attitude of let bygones be bygones does not work when you're talking about child sex trafficking. I think that's one thing everybody on all sides of the aisle can agree on. And there's just this fundamental arrogance to how they're handling this. You know, the president coming out and saying, well, I don't, you know, if you're somebody calling for transparency that was once one of my supporters, I don't want you as a supporter anymore. That's, I mean, that really struck me as incredibly arrogant and incredibly dismissive of what happened here. And we've got people, you know, some of his most staunch supporters, people, you know, Joe Rogan's endorsement really sealed the election for him. Laura Loomer, who he's taking advice from on various issues. These are not, these are people that he listens to and have been stalwart supporters of him. And even they're telling him that you need to reverse course. And he's stubbornly refusing to do that. And it's really, I mean, we could theorize why this is happening, but it's really just falling flat with the American people. And they don't, either they don't want to recognize that, or they just don't care.
You know, and remember back in the 80s and 90s, they made it sound like in media, or at least when you watch a movie or television, that quicksand was going to be a big problem. Everyone's going to run into quicksand sometime in their life. And of course, no one ever runs into quicksand. It's just a tool that they use in order to further a plot point of normally a pretty poorly made television show. This is quicksand for Donald Trump and the administration. They have all these other things going on, and they are self-imposing standing in this quicksand, sinking while they're trying to grab onto these other things that they're working on right now. He needs to realize, I think at least, as many politicians do, that it's not too late to reverse course and just say, you know what, whatever, let's do the special prosecutor to look into this, because if you really think there's something there, we'll try one more time, but I don't see it, but let's do it. At least kick the football down a little bit, because right now he is sinking, it seems like.
Well, and the sinking is all self-inflicted. You know, how this erupted was a reporter's actually a friend of mine, asked a relatively benign question of Pam Bondi and Jeffrey Epstein and, you know, about ties to alleged ties to intelligence. It was a relatively benign question, and the president just blew up on it. And that raised everybody's eyebrows of how angry the president got over what was a basic question. It was a fair question. And it just struck me as, it struck everybody as over the top for what he did, for what that question was. But also where the Epstein thing will hurt him is the Epstein issue alone is causing damage. But you tie that into a lot of campaign promises the president has made that he's starting to backtrack on. He's going to release the Epstein files. Now he's not. We're tired of sending money and weapons to Ukraine. Now we're sending weapons to Ukraine. I don't want to get America involved in foreign adventures. Now we're bombing Israel. We're bombing Iran at the behest of Israel. So all of that is starting to add up with people wondering, well, why is he backtracking on so many campaign promises?
Yeah. And, you know, I think with the Epstein stuff, his defense is you're just going to have to believe me on this one, because if we're going to say it's a waste of time, we're being honest with you. People aren't trusting government when it comes to Epstein. So that's going to be that's a tough sell, number one.
And just to your point there, it's a tough sell to the American people, because President Trump has made a career and won two elections based on not trusting government and promising to make government more trustworthy and taking a wrecking ball to government sort of being arrogant with the people and not telling them stuff. That was what that's his whole political career has been based at. And now he's doing a complete 180 just over Jeffrey Epstein, which is that a hill anybody wants to die on? But apparently he does.
Yeah. If you're playing baseball and let's say you put up 15 runs and at the end of the game, you lose. This is the thing that would cause you to lose after putting up that many runs. You'd be like, how in the world can you lose after putting up 15 runs on the board? So that's what it seems like. Don't do this. There's so many other good things going on that he can continue down the path. But can I give you a hypothetical as a journalist? Sure. And you can tell me how you would handle a situation like this, if you don't mind.
Not at all.
There's a lot of skepticism about this. And when there is skepticism and it's in the news, someone might say, okay, I'm a whistleblower. Let's say someone reaches out to you and says, I have information about the Jeffrey Epstein case. No one else knows this. I want to tell my story. How do you handle a situation like that if someone approaches you like that?
It would depend. I mean, we'd have to verify what their story is. We would ask for collaboration. We would ask for witnesses. We would ask for how they know what they know. I mean, we would do some digging to try to find out and try and determine the best we can how credible their information is.
Does that happen a lot? People reach out to you saying they have information?
Yes, and sometimes it is incredibly credible and sometimes it isn't. I mean, it's a surprising mix. I think you'd be surprised about how evenly that is split between the two.
Wow. Interesting. And I think about that, and I think there are a lot of people that want to tell their story, but they want to stay anonymous, which is a hard thing to do sometimes when it's a big story like this, which probably is one of the reasons why some people don't want to come forward. They say it's not worth the hassle for the world to hate me, or at least half the world to hate me.
And I think you can almost link that to this administration's attitude. If you're not going to get justice, if there is going to be no justice, why come forward? You know, that's the other thing I don't like about their attitude towards this is that they're discouraging people who could come forward with credible information to come forward, because it's just going to get their perception is it's just going to get buried.
Yeah. You know, this is another plot point that you see on television shows, but I don't know how often this happens in real life. Have you ever been compelled to try to give up a source for a story? Does that happen where a judge tries to force you to give up information you don't want to give up?
It's rare. I do have a friend in the 90s who went to jail for refusing to give up a source in Texas, but it's rarer than you would think. It's rare.
Right. One other story that is kind of interesting that Donald Trump brought up was Adam Schiff and mortgage fraud in the Department of Justice referral. Let's talk about that story for a moment, because this could be a really big story. What do you think's going on here?
Yeah, it could be. And it's a cut and dry case. That's what I think is so interesting. And there's a couple of points with this. It's a very cut and dry mortgage fraud, whether it's anybody, whether it's the senator from California or just some guy who lives down the street from me. It's very cut and dry. It's did you fill out these forms? And did you put this information down? And is this information accurate? It's really just that simple. And for your listeners who don't know, Adam Schiff is senator from California, so he represents California, has a home in Burbank. Also bought a home in Potomac, Maryland, I think in 2009, I believe. Used that, obviously, because he was in the House of Representatives at that time representing California. Put down that the Maryland home was his primary residence. And then, which you do, if you own two residences, you get a break. You'll get a mortgage break on your primary residence, because if it's a vacation home, an income property, you get a steeper mortgage than you would if it's just a house you and your family are going to live in. So to get the break, he declared that his primary residence. Then on tax forms, he could get a tax break of $7,000 if he declared his Burbank home his primary residence. So suddenly the Burbank home was the primary residence. But the thing is with mortgage fraud is those cases usually get settled quickly. There's very rarely is it their jail time. It's you usually pay a fine, you pay restitution to the bank, and then you have some sort of consent decree promising you'll never do it again and you'll face different penalties if you do. What I find interesting is it's essentially a technical violation. And if you want to compare that, President Trump convicted on those 34 felony counts in New York, that was also a technical violation. That was also a business fraud case in which forms were not filled out to the level that prosecutors thought they should have been filled out to. And it's interesting that you have Adam Schiff here cheering the prosecution of President Trump when he's essentially almost doing the same thing, according to the criminal referral to the Justice Department.
Yeah. And again, I'm just going to mention this is broadly speaking, because I'm just curious how this works on a bigger scale. And I know we're running close to time. Do you have a couple minutes?
I got time. Yeah.
Okay. A lot of people speculated. They pointed the signs to Adam Schiff as the person that may have been leaking this Russiagate information to the media in order to try to further this narrative. A lot of people pointed to Adam Schiff. It was never proven, but there's a lot of telltale signs that it was probably him, but we may never know. So let's say, hypothetically, you as a journalist have a high-profile politician that reaches out to you with information. Do they go through the same level of scrutiny as an anonymous source when you're trying to do their backstory?
The answer should be yes, but in most cases it's no, because that person has achieved a level of credibility.
Right. And when you're someone like Adam Schiff, again, this is hypothetical because none of this was ever proven, but still, it made me wonder if that same level of that same process would have been fulfilled when I saw Adam Schiff's name, because I thought, okay, maybe Donald Trump thinks the same thing, and maybe this is his way of saying, you know, I gotcha.
It very well it could be, because one thing we can expect from the, if this ends up being criminal charges being filed, that I would expect a Trump Justice Department will overcharge here. They will try to reach for a couple of charges that we would not expect. To use the example of the guy down the street filling out mortgage forms inaccurately, Adam Schiff will probably face more charges, and we'll see what happens. Nobody ever gets jail time for mortgage fraud. I mean, it takes a lot to do that. So I don't expect he would get jail time. I think this is going to focus on, even with the Trump administration not wanting to cut him a break, it's still going to result in fines and penalties and some kind of plea deal. Most of these cases are pled out anyway. That's assuming he did something wrong and they pursue a criminal investigation, obviously.
Jeff Mordock, White House correspondent for The Washington Times. If people wanted to look you up or reach out to you, where can they go?
They can always reach me at Jeff Mordock on Twitter. And then I'm always at The Washington Times. My email address is at the bottom of every story. So feel free to write and say hi.
Fantastic. Jeff Mordock, again, thank you for joining us and entertaining some of these hypotheticals.
Always. Thanks, Ryan. Appreciate it.
I'm Ryan Recker, filling in for Mark Reardon. Happy to be with you here today. We got a couple more segments, including 40 minutes worth. And Dave Simmons, host of the KMOX Dollars and Cents show, is going to join us a little bit later in the hour. I have a story for Ethan, our producer, coming up after the break. It's a crazy story. I want to get his thoughts on this. And if you are not watching on the live video right now, you should, because you want to see his reaction, his face when I tell him this story. Coming up, go to the Mark Reardon show page on YouTube and go watch it now. You're listening to 97.1 FM Talk. And welcome back. I'm Ryan Recker filling in. I had a couple other stories here. The KGB is going to release the JFK files, at least what they have on their side. That's kind of interesting. In Canada, a top scientist is recommending they create a new federal body to collect and investigate UFO sightings. That's kind of interesting. But I talked to a victim today. I did an interview, and I got to tell you, Ethan, I wanted to tell you this story and get your reaction to it of what happened to this person.
A victim. Okay? Oh, you're going to say what they're a victim of?
Right. I'm going to tell you, because I talked to him while he was in the hospital.
Okay.
Okay. This is a story of Northern Michigan. He lives in Florida, but came back up to his family's big plot of land for a family reunion. He said it's probably been about 20 years since he's visited this plot in Northern Michigan.
Okay.
He remembered when he was younger, his uncle used to take him to this tire swing, and they would jump into the lake and have fun and, you know, just swim. And now the guy has kids his age when he was young doing the same thing. So he wanted to be able to experience this with his kids. Mm-hmm. He is at the family reunion and he thinks, I better go test this out. Let's go even go see if this tire swing's still up there. So he goes to the spot where the tire swing is still there. He's 39 years old, swinging on the tire swing.
Uh-oh.
He jumps off the swing into the water. The water is shallow. He hits the shallow water and amputates one of his ankles. He says there's that face. I'm watching on the YouTube page right now. He says he gets down and there's his foot floating with his sandal on it next to him.
What?
His foot is floating next to him. His other leg broken. And he's in the water, can't stand, realizing, okay, I got to get out of here. But he can't move. And there's no one there because he did this by himself. He is stuck. and bleeding out into this lake. He said he saw muscle in his foot floating next to him. He thought he was going to die.
Wait, so just to clarify, you're not saying that they had to amputate his foot. You're saying that his foot was amputated, like it completely disconnected from the rest of his body when he landed?
Well, I'll fast forward a little bit. It was like 90%+ amputated. The only thing that was holding it together was a tendon.
Oh, my gosh.
You had bone and muscle sticking out the bottom.
Oh, my gosh.
So he's alone, bleeding out, can't move. No one knows he's there, yelling. And he said, I'm not someone that swears, but I started yelling the F word because I was hoping that my family would hear that and realize something was wrong because I never swear. He used it as a mechanism for survival.
Wow.
3 minutes later, a pontoon boat hears him screaming. And as what luck would have it, this guy is a military trauma medic. And he hops out, sees what's going on, jumps into action, and saves this dude's life. The guy said, I wasn't even going to go out on the water today. It was something my wife and I decided last second. If it wasn't for this trained veteran, for this specific training, this dude would have died. So the wife calls 911. He applies tourniquet, gets some sticks and stuff that's on the brush, and then gets an old shirt, calls 911. Medics get him out there, saving the dude's life. He gets up to the hospital. The doctors are like, we can't put this foot back on. And the guy's like, just try. He goes to surgery, and they're able to reattach his ankle foot. So
what?
Now, since he broke one foot and the other one had an amputation, it's going to take him 6 months before he can walk again because he can't do it. He can't put any pressure on anything right now, but he's going to be just fine. I talked to this guy today. Tell me that's not an insane story.
How did you hear about this story?
Michigan State Police put out a press release of this incident that happened, and they put me in touch with him to talk to him in the hospital. I thought it was such a wild story, and the guy agreed to talk to me.
That's all that is. They called it just an incident. That is like almost slander on this story, because is like, I mean, I don't know what it would be, but incident is not an intense enough word.
Right. And this poor guy, he said his wife and kids were at the site, the family, and he's like, when they went to go get help, he said, don't make sure my wife and kids don't come down here. I don't want them to see this. They will pass
out. Was he convinced he was going to die still at that point, do you know?
Oh, yeah. He thought he was a goner. He was bleeding out. He thought if no one came over, it's over. It's just what's going to happen. But he looked at it as an act of God that this person that shouldn't have been on the water, that just happened to have medical training for this type of trauma, happened to just float by 3 minutes after this happened. He said it's divine intervention,
it's
that
miracle.
I'm alive today. Isn't that something?
Now, did he explain how he landed in order to where he would do that amount of damage to his...
Said it was just shallow water. He had no idea it was shallow. So just think about you launching off of a cliff or something, or like a embankment into shallow water
Yeah, you're just not prepared for it. Oh, my goodness.
And you're 39 years old. You're not young anymore.
Oh, my goodness. Wow.
But
that
he's alive.
That's crazy. That's but what an amazing story that he's going to make a full recovery. And I tell you what, I don't know how often you're playing two truths and a lie at the age of 39, but he's going to have a pretty freaking awesome one here in a couple of years. Holy moly, that's unbelievable.
All right. Well, I wanted to share that with you. Coming up after the break, Dave Simmons is going to join us, KMOX Dollars and Cents Show, partner and managing director of One Private Wealth. And we're going to talk about the Dow Jones, the recovery, Jerome Powell, a lot of things that are going on finance-wise. Looking forward to that with you. I'm Ryan Recker, filling in for Mark Reardon on 97.1 FM Talk. And I'm Ryan Recker, filling in for Mark Reardon. Happy to be with you. Got a little less than a half hour here, but, you know, it's such an interesting time trying to watch the economy. And joining us now to catch us up, host of the KMOX Dollars and Cents Show, partner and managing director at One Private Wealth based in Chesterfield, Dave Simmons, thank you so much for coming on.
For having me, Ryan. I appreciate it.
All right. So here's the roller coaster we've been on. Donald Trump gets in office. A lot of people thought that was going to be the green light for the economy, and it was. Tariffs were announced. People started selling, and it went down, 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 down. We were watching multiple days where they had 1,000-point drops on the Dow. Things stabilize, slowly grows. Tariff announcements come out. It's not going to be that bad. Dow Jones now is just, things are skyrocketing again. So this has been a wild year when it comes to the stock market. How do you even look at something like this without being fearful, honestly?
Well, Ryan, that is the question of the year, isn't it? I have told people this. I've been doing this now for over 30 years. I've been in bull markets, bear markets. I've certainly been, I mean, this is a good economy, and you're right, the market's at all-time highs. However, this has been probably one of the hardest environments in which to actually manage money, because you don't know what the next tweet is going to suggest. You don't know what the market's reaction might be. And so what you learn is, well, not going to do really anything. At first, and you nailed it. You go back to really Liberation Day on that April 2nd when the markets tanked. And at one point, the S&P 500 was down nearly 20%. But honestly, what got the White House's attention wasn't really the stock market. It was the bond market. And these bond vigilantes said, oh, my goodness, this means maybe runaway inflation. It means a weaker economy. That's going to suggest higher bond yields, which means bond prices go down. And once the president and especially Treasury Secretary Bessent saw that, I think they decided, OK, we've got to back this off. And thus you had the 90-day pause. So that gets us to today, mid-July, and things seem to be going very, very well. But I do believe that Wall Street, the big boys and girls, the big institutional managers have determined that there's really I'm not going to trade on what Donald Trump says today or tomorrow. We need to pay attention to it. But we cannot trade through it, and I think that's what's happening now. And they're focusing on what you said at the beginning, and that is everyone was really excited and looking forward to a stronger economy and Donald Trump making sure that taxes were going to stay low. That's what's happening now, and that's really what's pushing the market higher.
Yeah, and before you had the tariff talks, and a lot of people panicked, they sold. You have another tariff talks, other different countries, not as widespread, but they're still kind of there in the back burner in the background, but they kind of wised up a little bit. They realized, oh boy, we probably shouldn't have done this before. And they're not reacting to it the same way, which goes to show you that they must have a lot of confidence in the American economy moving forward. And the Dow Jones, like earlier this week, they were flirting with that 45,000. I thought for sure they're going to get in that record territory. They were so close. Today, it looks like we were up about 230 points. I mean, I know we're not going to probably hit record territory tomorrow, but maybe even next week, if things are going well and we keep throwing on 230 a day, we're going to be there before you know it.
Well, Ryan, right now we're in the middle of earnings season. So the second quarter, of course, ended a couple of weeks ago, and now it's all about earnings. At this point, any talk of tariffs, yeah, that's out there, but it's taking a little bit of a back seat as you have one major corporation after another, not only talking about what they did in the last quarter, that's really not what analysts and investors are looking at. It's, oh, this is what we expect through the rest of the year. And, oh, by the way, if these certain tariffs do come to pass, this may or may not affect our business. And as we're seeing, even if some of the more draconian tariffs actually do come to pass, it's going to be very industry specific. It's going to be company specific. So I've been telling folks here lately, my original fear, like, oh, my goodness, this could really affect the economy across the board. I no longer fear that now. I think it's investors are going to have to be very, very selective and very picky. But the earnings so far seem to be good, and that's what the market's focusing on. And it wouldn't surprise me that we're going to continue to hit record highs. No guarantee of that. I don't trade on that, but I'm optimistic here.
Okay. What do you think of Jerome Powell?
Yeah, that's kind of in the news, too. Well, Ryan, the whole thing actually is a little bit silly, honestly. The president knows legally he just cannot fire a Fed chief. So what I would say is put Jay Powell to the sideline here just a second, because you can have an opinion to say, I think this guy's a horrible Fed chief, or you think he's the greatest thing ever, or somewhere in between. The president, there's a long history. Donald Trump is not the first president. In fact, it would be very rare for a president not to have some to butt heads with the Fed chief. And I just did a big history of it. In fact, I'm writing a little bit of, in my weekly commentary that goes out to clients about it tomorrow. And I went back to FDR and I looked at every presidency and every issue they had with their own Fed chief. And Ryan, do you know that there really wasn't a president that didn't have some issue? The difference is this: most of the time it was behind the scenes, and we only learned about it afterwards in memoirs, things like that. This people can love or hate Donald Trump, but one thing we do know, he's pretty darn transparent. You don't have to guess, oh, I wonder if the president likes this guy. You know it. He doesn't hide that. And so we know what he feels about the Fed chief. We know that he would like to fire him. But it's one of those, be careful what you wish for, because you would see a big market correction in both stocks and bonds if somehow he were to push this a little bit further. I don't even want to go down that rabbit hole, frankly, because I don't think it's going to happen. And he has said he has no plans to try to fire him. Legally, he can't anyway. But let's just hope that it ends there.
All right. Jay Powell. He's got his own nickname. I don't think the president's ever called him that, as far as I know. But yeah, it does get people wondering, you know, just all things considered, the economy is doing pretty well. I think most people watch it and they just want to know what the rates are going to be in the future. I think a lot of people look at it for mortgage sake, too, but I don't think those are ever going down again. It's the things that the things that I think most people really associate with the interest rates, even though mortgage isn't directly associated, because, you know, it's not exactly the same type of rate. I got to say, the stuff that people recognize, they recognize inflation when things cost more. They recognize when their interest rate on their credit card goes up because they have to pay more. Or if they try to apply for a loan, like through, like, let's say a car loan or something like that, the rate to try to pay that money back, that's going to be a little bit more difficult too. These are the things that people pay attention to. And I don't know, some people aren't excited about the Dow Jones or Wall Street going to record highs. They just want to know when prices are going to go down.
Yeah, and I see both sides on this, Ryan. I do. Those who believe that the president is correct and that the Fed, and it's not just Jay Powell. We have to remember, it's not one guy's vote. Yes, he is the head, but even if he wanted to raise rates, he's got other Fed governors who have to vote on it too. And they seem to be in agreement right now that they're not in a big hurry to lower rates. So I do get on the one side where people would agree with the president to say, I think it's okay to start lowering rates. Believe it or not, I happen to be one of those people who thinks it would be okay for the Fed to start lowering rates here. But I also understand the other side to say, look, why not save that dry powder? You should only be lowering rates when the economy is starting to suffer a little bit. The market is hitting all-time highs. The economy is doing relatively well. And if you start lowering rates, you might feed that beast, which could only maybe perhaps increase inflation more. And then the Fed has to actually start raising rates to combat that. I think that thought is overdone a little bit. I see parts of the economy, frankly, that are starting to weaken a little bit. And I think it's okay to lower rates now here in July. They meet again in a couple of weeks. They're not going to, by the way, I'm convinced of it. But I think it's okay to lower a quarter of a percent, because when the Fed starts actually engaging in some sort of activity, that does not filter through the economy for at least 6 to 9 months. And you can go back and look at a history. I know one of his nicknames, the president's nicknames of Powell, is Too Late Powell, but that can be applied to virtually every Fed chairman in our nation's history. They seem to always look at current data, which is backward looking, instead of having the proactive vision to say, but this is where we may be going. And I think if we wait too long and then we start lowering rates, then we have problems, because then you are waiting 6 to 9 months too long.
Well, Donald Trump has another nickname for Jerome Powell. Ethan, if you can play clip number 28, because there's one other nickname. I don't know if you heard this one yesterday. Let's see if we can give it a play.
He's a knucklehead.
I think that's in the all-star level of Donald Trump drops for radio's use.
Yeah, exactly. Like I said before, you don't have to guess where Donald Trump is on anything or anybody.
Yeah. Uh-huh. All right. If people wanted to listen to your show or find you online or anything like that, where can they go?
Yeah, the best place online, frankly, and it's pretty easy to remember. It's our team name, and that's just one, and you spell it out, O-N-E, onepwm.com. And PWM is private wealth management. So onepwm.com.
Onepwm.com. onepwm.com. All right. Dave Simons, thank you so much for joining us here. We really appreciate the time.
Thanks, Ryan. Appreciate it. Talk to you soon.
Partner and managing director at the One Private Wealth based in Chesterfield, and good market talk there. I think a lot of people are paying attention to it, myself included, and I think a lot of novices are paying attention to it lately too. And I think some people are getting dragged into it because it's crypto week and they may be looking at it from that standpoint, the future of what trading may look like in a digital wallet world, I guess. I'm Ryan Recker, filling in for Mark Reardon. We have one more segment left. We'll have the audio cut of the day coming up on 97.1 FM Talk. And I'm Ryan Recker, filling in for Mark Reardon. I'll tell you, these last two shows went by so fast, so fast. And I have a list of all these different audio clips that Fred pulled and prepared for the show. It's like 30 plus clips, and I think we played one or two through the course of the entire show. It's good to be overprepared, but it gives us an opportunity to do the audio cut of the day.
Stand by. Playback ready.
Now, the audio cut of the day.
So, Ethan, I don't know if you know this, but I got a message from Drew. He said, it's not too late to get fired again. Play some Shane Gillis. I'm going to not do that. So I don't know why he keeps trying to push us to get in trouble, but
he's a knucklehead.
Yeah. That's exactly the clip you need to say. Anytime we work together, will you please try to incorporate that into it? And I'm looking at down the clip list, and there's one that stands out as clip number 26. Apparently, Stevie Wonder has to dispel the rumors that he can actually see. This is a fantastic conspiracy. Let's listen.
Shortly after my birth, I became blind. That was a blessing because it's allowed me to see the world in the vision of truth. See people in the spirit of them, not how they look, not what color they are, but what color is their spirit.
Okay, so can't see. Now, it doesn't matter what Shaquille O'Neal has said. Ethan, have you heard the conspiracy?
No, I have not.
This is great. Shaq has told this before on the TNT postgame show, where he was in a hotel, elevator doors open up, Stevie Wonder alone. Well, maybe not alone. He might have been with someone. But Shaq walks in, doors close. Stevie Wonder says, "Oh, hey, Shaq." Shaq says, "I swear that happened." He's saying Stevie Wonder can see. Now, there's another conspiracy. There's a video of him performing on stage. I don't know if it was like the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, but there's a lot of big performers on the stage playing at one time. And I think Paul McCartney bumps a microphone stand and Stevie Wonder reaches out and grabs it while it was falling over the stand. So people are like, how did he know to reach out and grab that?
Maybe it's one of those situations, right, when you lose one of your five senses, all the other ones become heightened. You know what I'm saying? Like, maybe he can't see, but all of a sudden his hearing is super good. And he's hearing the footsteps, the giant footsteps of Shaquille O'Neal, and he knows it's Shaq.
Oh, he knows.
Or you know,
that's a size 20 shoe.
Or he can hear, you know, the microphone stand begin to fall, and he just like, and his instincts just kick in.
Maybe, yeah, it's like that scene from Jurassic Park where they see the vibrations in the water. That's how you know Shaq is getting close. The floor is just vibrating. Yeah, okay, it could have been something like that. All right, that is our audio cut of the day.
He's a knucklehead.
I thought Stevie Wonder was leaving the country. Was he one of the celebrities that said he's out of here because Trump's winning or something? I don't know. But still, good old little Stevie Wonder. There's another clip I wanted to play because I know we got a couple minutes. On CNN, Harry Enten was breaking down the midterms. This is clip number three.
Democrats are behind their 2006 and 2018 paces when it comes to the generic congressional ballot. At least at this particular point, Republicans actually have more net pickup opportunities. This doesn't look anything like those wave elections back in 2006 or 2018. For anyone who's writing the Republican House's political obituaries, hold the phone. This is a reality check. Republicans are still very much in the game.
Isn't it stupid? What's today? I forgot what Sue said. It was like Emoji Day or something like that.
World Emoji Day.
World Emoji Day. Tell me how stupid it is. If I see someone on Twitter and they use that blue wave emoji, I automatically write them off. There's not anything that that person's going to say that I'm going to enjoy reading. That, you know, that little blue wave that they use when they get close to elections? Oh, we're going to, it's going to be a blue wave.
Yeah, I just,
a bunch of Democrats are going
to win. I was going to say, I'm like, I didn't know the context of when you were, in what you were trying to use it. So that does make sense. That is funny. But I guess on my feed, I don't see that very much.
It's
thankfully.
Fine. Have you changed your habits on social media? Back when Twitter used to be like brand new, Facebook used to be new, people would actually use it for some discourse. And then you'd be like, oh, okay, I'll have a conversation with someone and I'll argue with them. But that's kind of the fun of it. I find that today, I don't even care to read the discourse. I'm using it almost as a way to search for show content, news, opinions, and I'm not using it as a way to communicate or share my opinion with other people or get into fights with strangers. Never again.
I never share my political opinion online. Not anymore. When I was like in high school and just starting to learn about politics and stuff, I would share like Ben Shapiro videos, like,
oh, sure.
Ben Shapiro, yeah, obliterates young liberal student, like all those ones. Like I thought those were awesome. I loved those things. Like, yeah, get a Ben. But no, I haven't. I've kept it quiet for a long time. I think you're probably a little bit safer in today's climate to be able to share and not be fearful of if it's going to affect, you know, jobs down the road or things like that. But I mean, there was a time, you know, in which, like, I feel like that could come up and bite you if you're a Republican. So I became reserved and just was like, I am not sharing anything. I deleted all of my, as much as I could possibly find of what I had shared in the past or, you know, retweeted or whatever. I just tried to, like, make it to where if you went on my page, you would not be able to know. Because I just, like, it's not that I'm afraid to speak my opinion. It's just, like, in the grand scheme of things, is it worth it? Not to me.
It's a graveyard of deleted tweets. A lot of them that, you know, in the past, you're like, oh, I wonder what that was about. I interacted with this person, but that person doesn't exist anymore.
Yeah.
Or the things they said are gone. You ever find yourself randomly blocked by people you don't know? That happens to me sometimes, too, where there's someone that's referenced in a tweet, and then you'll be like, oh, I can't see the tweet. Oh, yeah. I can't see the person.
Mm-hmm.
Why am I blocked by that person? I don't know. And then sometimes it's celebrities. I'm blocked by some celebrities that I have zero interaction with. And I found out that there are groups of managers that manage certain people's type of social media, and they'll preemptively block them across all their clients. And apparently I got on a list at some point, and there was a bunch of like C-level celebrities that blocked me for whatever reason, which has kind of really disappointed me.
I think you should be honored that you made the list.
I don't feel like I'm that controversial. Like, you've heard enough of my shows to realize that I'm not going out there and just being nuts all the time and trying to be the craziest voice and trying to come up with the hottest take. I feel like we have conversations. We have some interesting things to say, and I don't feel like I go off the deep end. There's nothing really that I post out there that would make, I think, a celebrity block me. But I forgot who some of them were. Rosie O'Donnell's one of them. Keep in mind, this is going back, oh boy, years ago, and I haven't checked in a long time. So this is back when Twitter was really popping, but anymore, I don't even know how much celebrities even use it. They wanted to go to Blue Sky, mm-hmm, and that kind of failed. Is that even still around?
It is around, but I don't think that it, I don't think it picked up like people thought it would. I think that a lot of people on the left said, like, okay, we're going to all boycott it, and this is going to become the new Twitter, but without, you know, the freedom to be able to type what you want, and it just did not work out in that way. So it's nowhere near what X is still.
Yep, and Threads, what was the one, the other one that was very short-lived?
Threads is still a thing, but you're right, it's not in the same way. I don't know if that was necessarily politically affiliated, but...
No, just a competitor. That's basically what they're trying to do.
Because I think Threads is owned by Instagram.
Yeah. Yeah, it's something like that. All right, well, it's fun. We'll just go find out who we're blocked by. I wish it was an easy job. Sometimes you have to just find it accidentally. All right, we know we have a big show tomorrow, and you have the Reardon Roundtable, but Mike Elam is going to be filling in tomorrow, which is great. I had the last couple of days. I got to tell you, I always have such a great time when I get a chance to fill back in here in St. Louis, and I know it happens semi-frequently, but I honestly say this. Anytime I get a message from someone, oh, it's so good to hear you doing this again, or a message on Twitter or Facebook, it does truly mean a lot to me. You can find me on Twitter at Ryan Recker. Ryan Recker Radio on Facebook would be another great way for you to reach out to the show. We'll hopefully catch you again sometime in the future on 97.1 FM Talk.
Get more at 97.1talk.com.